Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. In this audio, I want to look into the issue of Jews as managers and whites as workers. In the previous audio on how Jews think, I tackled the issue of emotional thinking and also the various tricks that Jews engage in order to muddy the waters and in order to get their way. And it's all to do with the way that they handle people. And I regard that audio as extremely important because that will give you an insight into the core of why Jews are different from whites. And it's a massive difference. But in this particular one, I want to focus on another angle that fools whites tremendously. So when you understand what I put out in the previous audio, and you understand what I'm putting out in this audio, then you're going to understand why it is that we are struggling to deal with these people. And why it is that these people seem to be winning all the time. But I do also want to make a few other points to you. If you understood clearly what I was saying in the last audio, then it should be clear to you that in order for Jews to win, they don't have to be cleverer than you. A Jew can win without being cleverer than you. And he can win without having more facts than you. His tricks will allow him to have a big edge over you. And when it comes to things like the so-called problem of anti-Semitism, which Jews blame on everybody else, it should be apparent to you from the last audio why Jews always have to blame everybody else. And they will never acknowledge that they are actually the real issue at hand. Another thing about the Jewish mechanisms is that the Jews can win for quite a long period of time. But when compared to whites, their periods of time for success are much shorter. Whites can carry on doing things for hundreds of years without running into any of the problems that Jews have, whereas Jews are constantly dogged by problems that are of recent and near recent and further back creations of the way that they behave. And their utterly unique problems are actually the direct result of their behavior, which they're always trying to rewire and rework and blame on everybody else. So with Jews, you'll find that everybody is the problem. Everybody on earth is the problem except them. They are never the problem. Never. And one of the downsides, a big downside for Jews, is that even when they win, they can't maintain their victory indefinitely. Even in things like the creation of the Russian Revolution and communism, which is their baby, that in and of itself had limits. And there came a time where eventually Jews were just pouring out of the Soviet Union. The very thing that they had created less than 100 years before, they were pouring out of it and leaving it as fast as they could. Whereas you'll find the opposite is true of whites. For whites, they can actually gain momentum, and the longer whites do something, the more firmly entrenched whites are. With Jews, it's the opposite. The longer they are doing something in a place, the less stable they become, because their methods have a long-term weakness to them. In fact, The Jewish methods are so nation-destroying that Jews themselves cannot remain in nations where they played a big role or which they even created themselves. So one of the consequences of Jewish victory is that Jews can also lose control of the very things that they've created. And that's a very important thing. It may appear to you that Jews are always winning, but in actual fact, Jews very often lose control of things that they created. And the only way for Jews to then survive is to make a run for it. They've got to dash off and start afresh. So the Jew has a need to start afresh because he's built up so much, let's call it bad karma, in the place where he was. He created so many problems and hatreds for himself that now he cannot live there among the people that he used to live amongst because they all hate him and they now know how he works. So don't imagine that Jewish victory is a permanent state and that it will remain forever. Not at all. Not at all. And a deeper analysis of Jews will show you that Jews themselves are so dependent on things that whites have created. Jews would not be able to function if it wasn't, for example, for the accounting systems and the money transfer systems and the whole accounting and banking systems, which can only function in an organized state using white technology and white methods. If these Jews had to go and be put into a place where there is no civilization, they, for example, would not be able to create it. They would be very much hamstrung. In the case of Israel, a huge portion, if not most, of Israel's actual infrastructure was created by Germany. Because the Jews are sucking money out of Germany for the supposed Holocaust. So there are many things sitting in Israel that weren't created by Jews, that was given to Jews by other countries, either as some kind of assistance or because of a scam like the Holocaust. The United States, for example, gives Israel billions of US dollars per annum. Billions and billions. So Israel could, for all intents and purposes, literally be regarded as a colony of the United States and Germany, to give you an example. Much of Israel was built by the United States and Germany and things that come from there. If the Jews had to do what the whites of Africa did when they colonized and they had few resources, the Jews would not be able to pull it off. And just to repeat, Jews are not as clever as they like to make it out they are. In fact, if you even go and look at the IQ of Israel compared to the IQ of Europe and even the USA, you may be surprised to find that the IQ of Israel is 5 IQ points lower than that of the United States. And the United States itself has about 1/3 of its population as being non-white. So a non-white population should be dragging down the IQ of the USA, but instead Israel has got an even lower IQ. So that should tell you that Jewish IQ is not all it's cracked up to be. Lots and lots of perceptions about Jews are not what you think they are, but I covered perceptions and all those things in the previous audio. In this audio, what I really want to focus on is the other aspect of whites versus Jews. It is almost a type of class warfare, in that whites are workers and Jews are managers. And I just want to clarify what I mean by that. Jews are managers in the sense that if you go and work for any business or any government organization, you've got a bureaucracy and you will report. If you are a common worker, you will report to your boss, who is either a team leader or a manager. At some point, there's going to be somebody in management, and the entire structure is made up of these managers. So a manager's job is not to do the work. A manager's job is to control the people who do the work. So the manager will get a budget. The manager will have various things that he needs done. And the manager has the ability to hire and fire people. And the manager then can organize his people and say, okay, you are going to be a team over here. You're going to do this and this and this. That lot is going to do that and that and that. This is how we're going to work together. These are the goals. And off you go. So the manager does not do the actual work. The manager instead controls the process of the work. He has a budget. He's got access to high-level things. He goes to conferences. He meets with his boss and others who are higher-level managers. So a manager is sitting at the top looking down on the workers. And Jews as a group, as a race, are actually managers. You might say to me, but there are lots of Jews who are common workers. And that's true. But I would say to you that Jews are managers as a race for a number of reasons. I noticed here in South Africa, for example, with these Jews who were my friends, I noticed that these Jews operate in a way that's very different to whites. The Jews, for example, were very ambitious. And I heard from different Jews that all of them were pushed by their parents to do lots of reading and book studying and to be ambitious. And another thing about them that was very peculiar, but many people have remarked on this kind of thing, and even Henry Ford himself in the 1920s, when he compiled and wrote The International Jew, he spoke about the fact that Jews always go to headquarters. Jews always go up. And that is a very important part of the way that Jews as a group function. A Jew does not concern himself with the common worker, with you and me. The Jew is interested in the people above us. In this regard, I would go so far as to say that Jews have got a respect for our structures, for our management and command structures that we ourselves don't have. Jews are insanely ambitious and power hungry. And they are taught to move up these structures. And they are taught to interact and even find artificial methods of interacting with people at a higher level. And they've got various tricks that they use. I picked this up from the way they behave. I remember in my early days in computers, I was working for what is now Telkom, which controls the telephones, but it also used to control the post office and things like the post office savings bank. And later, even when I worked in banks, I heard the same thing, where whites would say, we've got to be careful when we make changes to our calculations for interest and stuff, that, you know, if you do a calculation and you're out by 2 cents, somebody's going to phone you and tell you that you owe them 2 cents. You've got to be very careful that you do everything accurately. What I didn't think of at the time was that these might be Jewish people. And later, I discovered much more about this kind of thing. I noticed with my Jewish friends that whenever they had a problem, whether the problem was real or not real, they would not be content to say, go to the banking branch and go to the bank and go and speak to somebody low level in the bank and say to them, listen, I've got this and this problem. They wouldn't do that. They would instead go to the highest level person they could find. Like my Jewish friend used to tell me how his mother would cheat the supermarkets even. He told me she would actually go and steal from the supermarkets. And something he told me that his mother would do, for example, is she would buy milk. Then she's got some other milk that she hasn't used and that milk has gone sour. So what she'll do is she'll take milk that's got a newer date on it and she'll pull the sticker with the date off of the new milk, put it on the old milk, then she'll go with the old milk with the new date on it straight to the supermarket and she'll go straight to the manager. She'll find the highest level manager in the supermarket and she'll give him absolute hell over the fact that he's selling rotten milk that is still, you know, that is not within its expiry period. She would then give this manager living hell, make all kinds of threats. Then the guy would have to apologize to her and then he'd give her new milk for free. So I said to the guy, you know, your mother's going to go to hell. And that was because back then I was thinking in religious terms. Nowadays I would say she's gotten away with it. And unfortunately, since hell does not exist, she has successfully got away with something. But he used to complain to me about his mother and I would hear all these weird stories. And I'd say to him, man, that is just plain freaking evil. But he himself and other Jews operate in the same way. They might not openly admit to actions like the mother, but what they will do if they believe that there is something they can complain about is they will try their utmost to go to the highest ranking people they can. And my Jewish friend would say to me, ah, I had a problem with the bank that you work for. And do you know, I managed to get hold of the secretary of the CEO. And I'd say, wow, really? And he'd be very proud of himself for having managed to get that high. And I noticed with them that they are always looking for reasons to meet people who are higher ranking. Now they go there, even though their complaints may be small and minor, there is method in their madness. They will go and they'll make a nuisance of themselves with somebody high ranking. Because what they are really looking for is they are looking to make personal contact with somebody high ranking. And using this method, they are starting to jump. They're starting to skip their way to higher levels because they will continuously start having contact with that person, because this is how you can jump the gun and start meeting higher ranking people who you would not normally have access to. And it's a trick that works. Now, this kind of game that they play, these are things that clearly is knowledge that comes from their group. And this is why I say that Jews are managers. Because Jews aspire to business and high ranks and high power. And what you will find is that because there are many Jews who have become very rich, who have attained high ranks, that these Jews then pass on their experience to the lower ranking Jews. Let's call it the failed Jews. And they constantly pass this knowledge on to the failed Jews, so that those Jews also now have tricks whereby they can move up through our structures. And they know that power is important. And they know that power is wielded by individuals. And they focus on getting close to those individuals. So even if it requires that they have to come and complain and bitch and whine and moan and groan, they're also doing it to start establishing contact with the person. There was one guy from South Africa who left South Africa and went to Vancouver, Canada. And in the early 1990s, when the internet came about, he and I had contact, and he came to see me because we were talking about possibly doing something with software. And this guy was a salesman, a white guy, who sold expensive software. And the software that he sold in his normal daily work was software that I was familiar with, and I regarded it as very bad software. This software ran on what they called mid-range computers. So it wasn't a PC, and it wasn't a mainframe, which is the biggest computer. It's mid-range machines. And I'd come across this software many times. And he sold this software. And I said to him, you know, that software is a load of rubbish. People are paying tens of millions of rands for what is actually a load of garbage. It's unstable. It's got all kinds of problems, etc. I said to him, how can you sell that junk? You know, how do you manage to close a deal that is like 20 million rand or more? How do you sell garbage like that? So what the guy did was he explained to me, he said to me, the way that you sell stuff is you can't make a sale of this kind of stuff in a day or a week. The way that you make a sale is by establishing contact with somebody and you develop a relationship with somebody. Because software is not only, that kind of software is not only expensive, but it's a long-term investment for the company. There is a lot of risk involved in this stuff. So no company is just going to buy it on a whim. Therefore, in order to sell it, you need to actually get to know people in the company. You've got to get them to trust you, etc. And he described to me the process by which you can artificially establish contacts with people and eventually get people to trust you. And if you are patient enough, eventually you'll close the deal. Now, this guy wasn't a Jew. but he was just a normal white South African guy. He also wasn't a crook. He was just working for a company and they sold this garbage software, and that was his job. But he basically explained to me the process of how it is that you get to meet people and how with time you can take anybody who doesn't know you and you can get them to trust you, and eventually you can make money out of this relationship that you've built. And what he described is exactly the way the Jews behave. The Jew knows, don't go and talk to the low-ranking clerk at the bank. That person's got no power anyway. Take your stupid problem, but go 5 or 10 levels higher and complain to somebody. And moan and groan and find some excuse and reason to get somebody who's got a higher rank. And then the next time you go and complain to the same guy. And eventually that guy's going to get to know you. Now the same is true for all other things. And I noticed my Jewish friend, for example, he would go and hobnob with the black mayor of Johannesburg. And then he would tell me about it. He'd be so pleased with himself. And he would explain to me as time went by how he's hobnobbing with more and more of these various people and how he's going about it. And he's rubbing shoulders with all these powerful people. And the Jew is busy weeding and wangling his way into bigger things. On rare occasions, you'll even find that Jews will tell the truth about the way that they generally don't bother with people in the lower ranks of society. And this includes white society. Also, the Jewish population in any white country is always a small percentage of that country's population. Like the highest ratio of Jews to whites that I've ever come across in the history of the world ever is 10%, and that was for Poland. In South Africa, it was like 3.4%. In America nowadays, it's 4%. These are very high percentages. Even in the Soviet Union, Jews did not make up more than 2.5%. So Jews are always a tiny portion of the population. Like I say, 10% and less. And these Jews still have a lot of power because as a small group, they are moving into a much larger thing. And for such a tiny group, they've got vast numbers of people as a percentage of their population who are in very high ranking positions. So this is just to confirm that as a group, wherever they move in, they start moving to the top fast. They also play a disingenuous game where a Jew will promote a Jew and groups of Jews will help a Jew. So they will try and fast track Jews up through structures simply because they are Jews, and they'll bypass other people. So they don't really work on the basis of a meritocracy. They are out to assist each other, and they will quickly jump up through the ranks of any company or organization. And they are always self-promoting each other at the expense of the whites or blacks or whoever else is there. They will move themselves up through the ranks fast, and they'll do it on the basis of these are Jews and they work with Jews and they help Jews. And they do a lot of teamwork like that. So that is why the Jews don't just remain at the lower levels. They're ambitious, they only respect and look for the things at higher levels, and they've always done this. And even in Europe, even in Christian Europe, which they like to curse a lot, they always have an anger at the whites of Christian Europe. These Jews would see to it that maybe they befriend a king. Then the king is their key. And whatever problems they have, they rush off to the king. And you'll see that the Jews in America, for example, are the only group in America who have their own White House liaison office. They are the only group in America. Not the blacks, not even the Indians. Nobody has their own White House liaison. Only the Jews. Jews focus on structures with rank and power because they know that power comes from the top. And they even respect our power structures, knowing that you don't have to worry about the low-level people. You just get somebody higher level to kick the lower-level people into line, and that's that. Jews focus all their attention on getting to the top, by whatever means. And this means that Jews think like managers. Jews think like people of upper class. Jews think like an elite. They don't think like workers. And I'll give you an example of how I misunderstood Jews. I totally misunderstood them. Even though I'd spoken to them for years and I'd worked with them and interacted with them, I was trying at a point to get my Jewish friend in South Africa to say to him, listen, we got a problem with the blacks. The blacks are our enemies. The ANC is our enemy. And we need to resist these crazy communist people. And I tried to say to my Jewish friend, why don't the Jews and the whites work together against these communists who are seizing everything in the country? And I used to think in terms of whites and Jews standing together and fighting together for what I considered to be Western capitalist ideas, free market ideas, etc. And I couldn't understand why my Jewish friend was not at all interested in this, and why Jews as a whole would not be interested in this. And the missing element is because Jews are managers. Jews are not workers, they are not engineers, they are not scientists, they are not soldiers. Whites, on the other hand, the vast majority of whites in any country, the vast majority of whites are workers. That's all they are in their entire lives. Very few have got true management experience. Thus, the Jew does not think in terms of, oh, I've got to get a gun and I've got to go and fight somebody. That's not how a Jew thinks. The Jew thinks about who can we sponsor who's going to fight for us or on our behalf. That is how the Jew thinks. And in history, you'll find examples where Jews did this. The Jews, for example, hired a Muslim general. And the Muslim general conquered all of Spain. Then the Muslim general was going to go and conquer France. But Charles Martel, Charles the Hammer, smashed the Muslim army when it tried to go into France. However, the Jews and Muslims captured the Christians and held them under Jewish-Muslim control for 700 years, until the Christians could fight the Muslims and drive the Muslims out. The Christians did not have to fight the Jews because the Muslims were the army of the Jews. And then once the Christians could defeat the Muslims, then the Jews ran out of Spain. Then the Jews disappeared. So the Jew as a manager, as an upper class elite, looks on problems in a very different way to the common white. Now you will say to me, yes, but there are Jews who are scientists, there are Jews who are engineers, etc. What I'm trying to get across to you is that Jews as a group think like managers, and their behavior, even when they are not well off, even if they're not stinking rich, even if they are quite normal, they all think like managers. That is their culture. And that way of thinking, of moving up, and the mechanisms and the methods of a higher class of people, even if a good number of them are actually quite poor and quite ordinary, their culture, their whole thinking is completely different. And it reflects a management viewpoint. And for Christians, because Christians have so little knowledge of Jews, and for Christians, an important point that I want to make is that their religion also functions in that mode. That, for example, in South Africa, the chief rabbi of South Africa will go and he'll organize all kinds of non-religious education for Jews. And next to the synagogues, they have got auditoriums. I've even been in one. And they have these auditoriums, and they will have regular speakers who come and speak on topics of politics and business, politics and financial stuff. They will get a regular group of Jewish speakers, even coming from Israel, who will come, and these Jews don't sit in that auditorium and do Bible study. They don't go and read the Old Testament. They're listening to stuff about politics, about business, about money. That's all they think about, is politics and business. You think that they spend all their time studying their holy books? No, most of them spend their time studying politics and business. While the Christian is reading his Bible, these guys are studying politics and business. And their priests are organizing it. Their rabbis, who are their preachers, are organizing these things. So let us look at whites now. Whites as workers. The vast majority of white people across the planet think like workers. They think at a lower level. They think like the common person. And when I look back on my own life, because my parents weren't exactly rich, they had a short period where things went very well for them. But for most purposes, I would say that my parents weren't even middle class. They were lower middle class. So I was brought up to view life, and I always viewed life as a common worker, without realizing it. And I'm always looking at everything around me as a common worker. I must take care of this. I have to pay my bills. I have to do that. There is no easy path for me to the top. I have to go and work, and maybe if I'm lucky, I'm going to be promoted. I'm thinking like a worker. And then with regard to defense and politics, the blacks, being a threat due to their communism in Southern Africa and these hostile communists who are hostile towards whites and want to steal our goods and so forth, I'm thinking, man, you know, I might need a gun. How am I going to be able to defend myself? How are we going to defend ourselves? We need to arm ourselves. I'm thinking like a worker. I'm thinking like a worker. The only people on the planet among whites who have a higher proportion and percentage of management skills as a group is, ironically, the whites of Southern Africa. Because it's the whites of Southern Africa who, as a group, had a higher percentage of their people in management positions because we were ruling large numbers of blacks. So what makes us unique in Southern Africa is that the whites of Southern Africa as a group have got much more managerial thinking in our thinking processes than other whites in Europe and America, because we ruled blacks for so long. So that probably makes us unique among whites as a whole, that for such a small group, we have such a percentage of people who have had some kind of management experience, because there were so many blacks around and we could command them and order them around at times. And this makes the whites of Southern Africa kind of weird, because in Southern Africa, we were relying on our management skills all the time until we lost total control. And then we find that we've got too few, let's call it workers, among us as a group. And now we have to adjust our entire group think towards thinking like a worker. Now, at the opposite end of the scale are the Germans. Of all the whites who think like workers, the whites who think the most like workers are the Germans. German society and culture, especially at its peak in Nazi Germany, that culture was 100% a worker kind of culture. But even when the Nazis weren't there, the Germans, more than any other whites, are a fervent worker-based society. Their thinking is about labor. It's about physical labor. Everybody must work. Everybody must do work, even if it's hard physical work. Of all the white societies on the planet, the Germans are the most worker-orientated of all the white societies. And the whites of South Africa and Southern Africa are the least worker-orientated. However, as we've discovered, once you're in a multiracial state and you've got others who outnumber you, suddenly you need workers. You need people at the bottom. You can't make an existence out of being management. Management is for the few. Working is for the many, if you are to have a stable and powerful society, which Jews themselves cannot have. Jews cannot have that. So when Jews are outside of Israel, and I think nowadays even Israel is becoming more management orientated, but for the vast majority of Jews, they cannot accept a worker orientated society. They have to move into foreign societies in order to be able to continue with their management type things, which work so well for them. So Jews as a race are like a race of people where everybody is a manager, 95% of them are managers, and hardly any of them are workers or want to work. The whites of Southern Africa were falling into this trap. And with multiculturalism coming and vast numbers of non-whites pouring into Europe and America, the danger for the common whites of Europe and America is that they too will enter into more managerial mode. The problem with moving into managerial mode is that you start handing over certain critical types of work, including military stuff itself, which you need to defend yourself with, military, police, etc. Even those things you start handing over to non-whites. And later those non-whites can turn on you. So there is a danger about moving into a totally managerial mode. It makes you incapable of running your country. If you are totally in managerial mode, you need slaves underneath you. And the only way that people could do that successfully were like the Spartans, who physically conquered and made people slaves and kept those slaves as their workers. And they physically used their methods to have a slave worker group in their country. And they did it using military force. So they couldn't do it as managers, but they could do it using military force. So all the men were soldiers, and they could control the slaves. But if you move into totally managerial mode, you start losing control of the lower structures of your society. And that can present you with problems in terms of future rebellion and revolution. And the whites of Southern Africa were caught out like this big time. But what this also means is that Jews as a whole cannot have a country because they need a way to enslave people and get people to do all the stuff that they don't want to do. Which is why Jews prefer to run to other countries and they find countries where there is a proper structure. There are police, there are army, there is a government, there is a whole legal structure. Then the Jew functions at his best inside somebody else's country because he cannot function alone with just managerial skills. He's got to do it as part of something bigger. And it puts Jews in a situation where they can't ever function as a society. And I used to say to my Jewish friend, "Why don't you go to Israel?" And he's like, "No, no, no." And you will find, and Adolf Hitler actually predicted this, he predicted in Mein Kampf that if the Jews were to get their own country in Palestine, because that's what it was called at the time, if Jews were to get their own country, that most Jews would never live there. And that is completely true. You'll even find that right now, Jews are moving out of Israel into Germany, into Berlin, into other countries in Europe. Jews, in fact, even force themselves into countries where the whites don't even want them. Because for the Jewish mechanisms to work, they have to function inside of another structure. And they need to function inside somebody else's structure. And that is the weakness of living like a manager. And it's a mode that the whites of Southern Africa need to get out of, is this mode of thinking like a manager. It has its uses when it comes to manipulating other people and looking down on other people as a group and understanding them as a group. But it's a dangerous way to live because you are dependent on other people. Whereas if you have your own structure, where most of your people are workers and a few of your people are the managers, which is the way most white society always was. In Europe, it's always been this way. In America, it's mostly been this way. In that sort of structure, you control everything from the top to the bottom. So there are many benefits that come from that. Many benefits come from it. And there are many good things that come out of that. So one important thing about a multicultural society where you get large numbers of other people coming in is that you get an artificial promotion of the majority of the whites. So whites, instead of all being at the bottom as workers, now move up a couple of levels because so many more of them are management. So in the future for Europe and America, as non-whites pour in, is that there will be an artificial raising, of, let's call it, social status of whites, because there are going to be, let's call it, the common worker slaves, common worker drones, are going to be non-whites. And it makes the whites feel quite happy about this, because they all feel that they're like moving up on a structure. But meanwhile, the bottom of their society, the policemen, the soldiers, the really critical things that you need for a safe and prosperous country, those things are actually being replaced by aliens who could later engage in, let's call, a peasant revolt. So there are things that will fool you for a couple of decades until you find that all these others at the bottom can now rebel against you. And they are the workers, they are the soldiers, they are the police. And it's something you've got to be very careful of, because any kind of weakness in a society can easily be exploited by an enemy. And that's what happened to the whites of Southern Africa. Is the Soviets and the Chinese and the Jews looked at Southern Africa and they saw, what we have here is a few whites who make up an upper class, a management type class. And these whites control large numbers of blacks. And all we need to do is turn those blacks against that small group of whites, and eventually we'll destroy them. And they were successful. However, it turned out that it was a lot harder to destroy us than they expected it to be. It was a lot harder. And I'm not going to go into the details of why it was a lot harder. But there was a worker element in our societies that helped to keep us going. That was key. That, along with quality, those things made it much harder than anybody expected it to be. So let us look more at the white worker way of looking at things. The white worker looks at common life and he says, how do I have a family? How do I look after my children? Because he's responsible for his tasks. The husband and wife have to look after their things that are theirs, and they've got a lot of work to do. And they are the worker drones of society. So they also do not look down on their own people, because they are among the mass of their people. They therefore look at life from a common man's perspective. And they do not see things the way that Jews do. They do not have many friends that they can turn to who are high ranking, who can quickly do them a favor or this or that. Most of their friends are just common people like everybody else. So being the worker drones of a nation makes them all think like worker drones. Whereas the Jew is a high-level creature and he looks down on things. He looks from a management perspective. But the workers do have certain advantages, especially the white workers. The whites, being a high-trust society, also have unique abilities. In that, when whites focus on their jobs, whether they are soldiers, farmers, scientists, engineers, they focus their entire life on their career, on their chosen field. And you'll find that whites have got large numbers of specialities at the lower levels. And because most of them can only be that one thing for most of their lives, they therefore are able to do very high quality work. The white ultimately is a high quality worker, and white societies as a whole are generally high trust societies and high quality workers. My own mother used to say to me, because she was just a common housewife, she used to say to me, if I polish the floor, I will polish it to the utmost of my ability so that when I polish the floor, that it's the best that it can be. And that is the attitude of a high quality worker. And all through our societies, if you look around, you will see high quality white workers everywhere. And among the values of these high quality workers is a pride, a deep pride in their work. So if the guy is a motor car mechanic, he will pride himself on the quality of the work he does as a motor mechanic. And a guy who does electrical work will have pride in his work. And you'll find that pride is a constant thing that comes up out of all of these professions. Whether these people are just policemen or whatever they are, they have a pride in what they do. And they develop high levels of skill at what they do because that is what they are doing most of their lives. So you have this pride in their personal skill, and it actually goes through into all the things that they do. Thus it is that our scientists, who are actually among our most important people, if not our most important people, our scientists are freaking excellent. Do not be fooled by the spate of Jews who win Nobel Prizes in recent decades, because this did not happen in the past. In the past, when science was white dominated, before Jews got to meddle with it, whites vastly dominated all these fields like the Nobel Prizes, etc. And if you look at places like Harvard, you'll see that because Jews took over Harvard, now it's just filled with Jews, and they're busy Jewing, to use the words of Tan Staffel of the website The Age of Treason. They're busy Jewing, which is the kind of stuff that I'm describing to you. They're busy promoting each other, glorifying each other, while pressing other people out of the way. So when it comes to things like Nobel Prizes for physics, etc., I just kind of ignore it because I know there's a lot of Jewing going on there. Jews promoting each other. And so now you find that Jews are the number one scientists in the world. But in reality, all the greatest scientists are all actually European. The vast majority of them were European. Huge numbers were German. And all the greatest progress that we made in the past came from our scientists. That's why we're also not progressing much anymore. You'll see that nowadays, scientific progress, the rate at which it moves, is a fraction of what it was doing 150 years ago. 150 years ago, people were thinking really big thoughts. Nowadays, very small thoughts, small incremental improvements on what was already invented 100 years ago or more. But whites, when they focus, are high quality workers, and they are freaking excellent at what they do in all their different topics. And where they are at their best are in technical subjects. All kinds of specialized technical things they are excellent at. So we don't have many managers, but we got large numbers of excellent workers. People with great attention to detail, great pride in their work, highly precise. These are the real qualities of whites. So when you have a management-orientated group versus a worker-orientated group, how do these groups clash and how do they see things and what are the advantages of the one over the other? Well, people who do a top-down approach to life are very much a strategy-based people. I would look on that as strategy. Strategy is top-down. The president sits at the top, he looks at the whole, and he strategizes. But at the bottom level, you've got what I call tactics. And I actually did a video where I spoke about strategy versus tactics as a general principle in life. And I'm going to reiterate a few of those points. In there, I made many more points, which also would apply to Jews, but I did not define Jews there. But a lot of the points I made there are valid here, because if you deal with strategy versus tactics, there are interesting things that happen. Tactics is what you would do if you're an individual soldier, if you're a couple of soldiers. A couple of soldiers would work on tactics. What does the small group do? What does the individual do? The general at the top, he sits and works on strategy. So when you're dealing with whites versus Jews, you're working also with strategy versus tactics. And there are quite a number of whites who've expressed the opinion to me that if you're in strategic control, that's it. Whoever is in strategic control at the top, that's pretty much it. Well, that is true for much of the time, but there are times when it does go the other way. And when you work with strategy versus tactics, there are other finer details that come into play. And a lot of these lessons have been learned in war. And things that you learn in war can be applied to other areas. So when you've got somebody with strategy controlling things from the top, they've got lots of powers, but they've got a very big picture view of things. Whereas people at the bottom who are tactical, they've got a small picture view of things. You would think that strategy dominates tactics. And for much of my life, I always was at pains of trying to figure out which is superior, strategy or tactics. And I flip-flopped on the issue. And here in Southern Africa, I felt that whites, even in Southern Africa as a group, found themselves functioning more at a tactical level and doing quite well. And the Germans functioned excellently at a tactical level as both workers and soldiers. And for much of my life, I actually thought that strategy ultimately trumps tactics. That even if you are good tactically, there comes a point where you can be overwhelmed tactically, like happened to the whites of Southern Africa. However, I must tell you, in much later years, I changed my view on strategy versus tactics. It hit me one day that the greatest source of knowledge that whites have comes from science. Science is a vast mass of accumulated knowledge. And there's an interesting problem with science and scientific method, is that in scientific method, you can propose an idea, a concept, a theory. And that would be like proposing a strategy. However, the key part of science is that every theory or hypothesis must be tested, which means you've got to get down, get out your test tube, do whatever you need to do, go and measure something, and you've got to find yourself drilling down into unbelievable amounts of detail. And that in actual fact what happens is that no matter what hypothesis you are proposing, ultimately, the real determining factor is the experiment, the detail. You can propose any hypothesis you want, but if the detail doesn't support it, then you've got to throw it out the window and come up with a new hypothesis. Therefore, the greatest amount of knowledge ever accumulated by whites, and make no mistake, the white knowledge base is the greatest knowledge base on the planet, bar nobody, and nobody comes even close to it. The greatest source of actual knowledge was acquired through painstaking attention to detail and constantly throwing one hypothesis after another out the window. At the end of the day, science is determined by tactics. That in actual fact, it's detail that's everything. And from this attention to detail comes the greatest successes and achievements and amounts of knowledge that anybody on the planet has ever acquired. And this made me realize that at the end of the day, the ultimate power is detail. That if your attention to detail is deep enough and excellent enough, it almost doesn't matter what happens at a higher level. The higher levels mean very little. And even in military terms, where I used to look at these things and debate the point at which the one breaks down and the other one doesn't, I began to realize that, you know what? If you do your detail excellently enough, the thing coming from the bottom can trump whatever comes from the top. And that means to me that whites, as a race, have the skill and the worker capabilities and the knowledge and the excellence that if whites ever need to overcome that which comes from above, they can, even now. Even in this age, even with all this high tech, that in actual fact, the white still has massive power. And therefore, when whites and Jews are clashing, it's a clashing of management versus workers. And how it works is that the manager, with his strategy, one of his problems is that strategy takes a long time to have an effect, especially the way the Jews do it, because Jews often can't do their strategy overtly. They've got to do it covertly. So it's got to be like a thing that sneaks in. So their strategy is slower than normal for it to have an effect. It does have a big power, even though they are a small number. But when it comes to tactics, whites are tactically more flexible than anybody else on the planet. And I see it over and over again in every society, that tactically you can make almost infinite adjustments to anything. And whites are actually unbelievably adaptable. Let me wind up by pointing out a few other important things about workers versus managers. The worker is somebody who's also used to having to adapt to that which is forced down on him. He's constantly adapting because he does not have the power to change things directly. And he gets used to living and existing in this way. And whites especially are very adaptable. And if they are pressed from this way and pressed from that way, from the top, they have to give way, because to not give way, to resist, could mean jail sentence, etc. But they are used to adapting to things forced down on them. And it's part of how they think. So even when they don't like something, they are always willing to accept less than they really want, because they are used to their desires being greater than that which they're allowed to have. And whenever they're in a situation, they end up having to compromise in some way. Women are probably the most like this of the whites. Men are less so, but women are more so. A woman is used to more compromise. A man, not so much. And a man's natural instinct is to compromise less and resist more, which has a great value, I might add. The Jew, on the other hand, is different. The Jew looks from the top down. He can see things. He's got access to information that the common worker doesn't have. And he's more demanding. Jews will therefore never really accept things that other people want them to accept. If the common worker had to say to the Jew, listen, I want this and this and this and this, the Jew is used to operating from a top-down process and pushing the worker back. The Jew will never accept that which is demanded of him. He will find it unacceptable. If you look at Jews as a group, you'll see that they constantly push back against everything that comes their way. Very much so. They'll moan and groan and bitch and whine and agitate at the slightest little thing. Whereas if whites are put in the same position, whites will unhappily accept things that are forced down on them. Whereas the Jew will moan and bitch and groan and whine and cry and agitate against the slightest little thing that bothers him. These are a people who are full of all kinds of drama. Some of it real, other drama largely created in order to press back against people. But they don't just accept things. And if you were to try to compromise with them, they wouldn't compromise with you. It's not really possible. They are much more demanding. I would go so far as to say that Jews are the greatest spoiled brats on the planet. They like to market it that they are the most hard done by, most maltreated people on the planet. This is completely not true. It's actually the opposite. They are actually the people given the most opportunities, allowed to have their way the most, even when they don't deserve it. And also, because they operate on a management basis, they know all the formal and informal tricks that can be used against people at a lower level. And they exploit each and every one of these tricks. They know how to herd those people below them, and how to work on them, what are their weak points, how do you get them to change. And they use these things against whites all the time. And whites are always just adjusting, stepping backwards, and accepting less than they really want, but they know that they will always lose, or they feel like that. You've got two very different kinds of people at work here. Jews also have a great admiration for a thing they call chutzpah, but you actually spell it C-H-U-T-Z-P-A-H. They pronounce it chutzpah. And what it basically is it's boldness. But it's almost like bold bullshitting approach to life. It's a kind of a fake it till you make it kind of approach to life. And Jews have a tremendous admiration for Jews who are bold. And they go forward with boldness, but it's like a bold bullshit that they use. And this is also another one of their tricks that they use to go at people and come and present themselves as something powerful. That's why you get these Jews boasting, oh, but Jews are the cleverest people on earth. Well, that's actually rubbish. You know, people with higher IQ than Jews all live in Europe. You can go and see what their IQs are. And when you see what they've done technically, mathematically, in engineering and science, Jews don't hold a candle to them. Don't hold a candle to them. But Jews like to make the most of Einstein. Also, a whole misrepresentation there. Not even going to go into it. All I'm going to say is that Einstein probably misled and damaged physics more than anybody else. He's probably slowed down the progress of science massively through his rubbish. But the Jews keep pushing Einstein, Einstein. Whereas before Einstein, there was a lot of progress being made in physics. But boldness, loudness, these are among the management tricks that Jews have learned. So there's also a bit of marketing in this as well. Jews are big marketers of themselves, bold marketers. A Jew will bounce into a situation and claim to be able to solve a problem even when he doesn't have a clue. And whites, because whites think like workers, if somebody bounds in with a whole bunch of confidence, the whites will actually accept that. Oh, goodness. You know, this person sounds so confident, therefore he is confident, therefore he does know. But the reality is actually the opposite. I had a Jewish lady friend, and she was very much into marketing in her career. She was very good at it. And I used to talk to her, you know, how do you get into the upper classes? How do you behave? How do you fit in? And she told me a whole bunch of things, which actually all of them irritated me. I lost a lot of respect for the elite and the upper classes from the things that she told me. And I could see that they're genuine. This is the way the upper class works these days. It really irritated me. My sort of lower middle class worker portion of my body just could not accept this junk, what I looked on as rubbish. And she was, just like I mentioned in the other audio, a very much a perception orientated person, and a kind of thinking that came out of her mouth that a lot of Jews work on is fake it till you make it. Be bold, have chutzpah, pretend to be excellent even if you're not, dash in there, try and tell everybody you know the answer, kick everybody into line even when you don't, even when your idea is bad. And the whites, because they're just workers, the whites don't think like that, and whites are not bold like that. And whites will step back and say, okay, you know, we got to listen to this person. Meanwhile, it's just a lot of Jewish junk. Just comes from all their upper class, higher level way of thinking that whites are not used to. And these people can come and they can play the game. And fake it till you make it is definitely a good portion of that kind of thinking. So I hope that that gives you a little bit more of a perspective of the difference between us and them. And this is also why when whites and Jews clash, it's not a case of there's a Jewish army that comes to fight a white army. Not at all. You get a couple of white guys who say, man, we'd like to go and beat up or shoot some Jews. But the Jews don't think like that. The Jews think, no, you see, what I've got to do is we've got to get the police to go and shoot or capture those whites. We're not going to fight them. And so you've got this weird kind of conflict that occurs between whites and Jews, where the whites want to kind of get at these Jews, but the whites are thinking in worker terms, whereas the Jews are thinking in management terms. And the Jews are looking from the top down and they're saying, okay, how are we going to control these people? Oh, okay, we've got to go speak to that guy, and that white guy's in charge of the cops, or that guy is a politician, or he's a businessman. We'll control these whites through these mechanisms. So they use top-down mechanisms to control us. And we're trying to fight sort of from the bottom up, but we haven't got anybody higher up that can help us. And we get very frustrated. And indeed, whites get extremely frustrated. This just adds to the hatred, because they are trying to like do things, and then they find that things at the top and above them are controlled because the Jew has already instituted his management procedures. And it's a weird kind of a battle that takes place between whites and Jews. But in the end, eventually over time, everybody gets sick of Jews. Even the upper classes will get sick of Jews. Even the people who are hobnobbing with the Jews today will, in 100 years' time, want to strangle them. Eventually, the Jew games will run out of steam because everybody starts cottoning onto them. And then the Jews will sense all this anti-Semitism and they'll know that, you know, their time is running out. But they'll carry on as much as they can because they've gone through these things so many times. They've been through the cycle many times. They never change their ways because they can't, because the only things that work for them are the things that I described in my previous audio, and eventually this whole process just repeats itself. But their time is always limited, especially among whites. I would go so far as to say that the time of Jews is limited among all peoples, and that Jews will never be happy with anybody. That in actual fact, the best time they had was with whites. It was also the longest time they had. And from what I've observed of them with blacks and other non-whites, their next best time was with Muslims and Arabs. I don't think Jews will function well with blacks. I've observed them a lot. I think that the Jew-black thing will fall apart sooner than you expect. That in actual fact, all races will hate them in the end. And they themselves have to be continuously thinking about where do we go to when we have to flee for our lives, which are problems that whites and others don't have. We don't have the problem of the very people that live amongst us just grow to hate us more and more and more with each passing day. That's just not a big thing for us. Whereas for the Jew, it's inevitable. It will come. It will come just in the same way that darkness follows day. It will come. The one danger that has made things a lot worse for whites is that whites have allowed Jews back in again and again and again, and have allowed the problem to recur so many times. Because Jews are not properly punished, and they have an escape mechanism always, Jews have become better and better and better at managing us, at handling this thing, at knowing how to push our buttons. Whereas we have forgotten about how to deal with them. And by letting this problem recur, it's actually getting worse and worse each time. The whites struggle more and more to get out of this grip, and it's getting harder and harder to get out of this grip. it's very dangerous by having this alien race which hates you to constantly move through your ranks and structures, know your methods, learn your temperament, learn the tactics to use against you. It's actually very dangerous, and it's made it ever harder for whites to be able to control Jews. In the last 300 years, it's been getting harder and harder for whites to break out of this kind of trap. And another point about this is that the Jew can see 100 years into the future, whereas the whites do not. The Jew is already looking at what is he trying to create 100 years from now, 50 to 100 years from now, easily. He's looking for that, and he's aiming for that. Whereas the whites are only realizing, oh, you know, things are getting a little bit weird. And they don't realize that they've already been in a trap for, let's say, 40 years. Meanwhile, the Jews have been planning 100 years ahead, and the whites start noticing after about 30 years, oh, you know, this is changing a little bit. That's a bit strange. And they don't realize that they're already on the path that the Jew has set in motion. Which is very sad. Whites would actually be excellent at planning their future if they could just gain control of their own hierarchy. That's the problem. So you've got this, almost this wandering band of managers and wannabe leaders called the Jews. They're like this wandering band of managers and wannabe leaders who can't find a country where the common people can accept them. Nobody respects them, and when you live with them for long enough, you learn to hate them. The longer you get to live with them, and the more you get to know about them, the more you begin to despise them, because they have all kinds of weird, creepy values that are based on all kinds of fakery, which I discussed in the previous audio. My own view is that Jews are definitely not as clever as they pretend to be. They're definitely not as successful as they pretend to be. They can set forces in motion which they then lose control of. They are definitely dysfunctional in many ways. But they've found a kind of a niche and a kind of a mechanism, set of tactics and strategies that allows them to prosper for periods of time. And then they have to run. They've got many, many shortcomings. But our problem has actually been a problem of tolerance. Way too much tolerance. Christianity has added to that tolerance times 10,000. We have tolerantly accepted things which we should not be accepting for even a fraction of the period of time. We are way too tolerant. Our problem as whites is we are unbelievably tolerant, and Christianity has made us 10,000 times more tolerant than we should be. And out of this tolerance has come a nightmare, and the nightmare just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I hope that this will give you some additional insights into these Jews, that between this audio and the previous audios, that you now start to grasp the differences between us and these people, that we have got very, very different approaches to life. But in the end, it's not our approach that is the worst one. We are okay if we just solve a couple of problems. The Jews, on the other hand, have unbelievable numbers of problems, and their problems are created by themselves. We whites have got dozens of countries that exist right now that were created by ourselves, that have functioned for hundreds and sometimes even thousands of years. We have ruled continents, we have controlled things, we've conquered, we've explored, and all our stuff works. and our stuff can work for long periods of time. Whereas these Jews are constantly on the run, a race of nomads, because they can't exist peacefully and successfully in one place. And even when they have places like Israel and that place that they had in Russia, even when they have those places, they are not happy and they can't last. And most of them don't even want to live there. Most Jews don't want to live there. Whereas if whites had their own homeland, most whites would immediately want to move to their homeland, not Jews. They are the dysfunctional ones. We obviously have a couple of weaknesses in our system, which is how these people get to come in and how it is that we believe that they add value to our society. I believe that the core issue that's the problem among whites relates to economics. We've got some economic shortcomings. There are things in our thinking where our minds aren't quite sorted out. And I think it's through economics and money that the Jew got their hold, along with things like banking and reserve banking and the Federal Reserve type of concept, Bank of England, etc. They've managed to make us believe that they've got some kind of economic benefit. We in and of ourselves need to sort out the weakness in our own economic thinking so that we don't need these people. I believe that that is the core issue that is our weakness. And once we solve that problem, all our problems will disappear. Otherwise, stick with the white way of thinking. But we do need to have a little bit more upper class, higher level thinking in our group. That's all that we're missing a bit. Otherwise, in all other respects, we can beat these Jews hands down. They are not what they appear to be. Alfred Schaefer, who's sitting in jail on trumped up charges against him in Germany, he always refers to the Jew as the parasite. And he's right. The Jew is a parasite. He's not adding value. He's adding a lot less value than you think. In fact, he's not adding value. But there are people among us who believe he's adding value, when in fact he's not even adding value at all. In the end, do not lose faith in whites. Do not lose faith in the Western world. Do not lose faith in Europe or the USA or ourselves or our thinking. We just need to fix a few little things and we will be fine. Whereas for them, I don't know what their future is, nor do I care. That's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.